Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Today we have five rounds of the magazine. Round number one, stuck inside for the past month, has made me realize that I essentially have zero hobbies besides golf. The golf course that I go to is closed now. Let's talk about some things that we should bring back from our childhood. Round number two, a French VIP retiree did one of the things that you can't do in a fighter jet. He pulled the ejection lever, much to the chagrin of the pilot. Round number three, career day goofing continues with damage control officer from the U.S. Navy. You don't know what a damage control officer is? I didn't either, so don't feel bad. You're going to find out in round three. Round number four, throw on your Dakota Ring boots. We're going to do a little spy goofing and talk about the CIA's mid-century mind control project. And finally, round number five, because of coronavirus, things will change forever, possibly. If Dr. Fauci has his way, we won't be shaking hands anymore, and we have some possible replacements that we are going to do, and all that's going to be brought to you by our good friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is the place that you want to go if you need to watch Doctor Who that's only streaming in the UK on Netflix. There's lots of other options too, like more additions to the Great British Baking Show, which you're a big fan of, right, Catherine?
Indeed I am. It's my some people have the golf sound in the background, some people have whatever. That's my golf sound.
You have Mary Berry in the background?
Mary Berry, the guy who wears all the wacky shirts, you know, the whole
Now, spot. Mary Berry, I want to talk about this for a second, just quickly. Have you seen the show, Cons?
No.
Oh, I'm surprised. You usually watch every show. So yeah. We have Great British Baking Show. Mary Berry seems like she would be, if you just looked at her on its face, you would think this woman, I don't know if I should, she's snarky. I was going to say a different word, but I
wouldn't. I thought you were going to say fucks.
No, man, she might. I don't know. But yeah. Mary Berry seems like she has like a mean kind of face. But she's actually a delightful person. She doesn't insult anyone.
Maybe she's a former military lady who used to be a total hard ass. And now, and after the war, she said, I'm just going to bake from now on. But she still has that edge to her, probably, is what happened.
All right, so ExpressVPN hides your IP address if you want to watch more Mary Berry. You love a little anime like I know a lot of the Okinawa Marines who listen to the show do. Use ExpressVPN to access Japanese Netflix and be spirited away. But it's not just Netflix. It works for all different things like Hulu, BBC iPlayer, YouTube, you name it. There are hundreds of VPNs out there, but the reasons that we use ExpressVPN to watch shows is that it's ridiculously fast. There's never any buffering or lag, and you can stream in HD no problem. It's also compatible with all your devices, your phones, your media consoles, your smart TVs, and so much more. So you can watch what you want on a personal device or on the big screen wherever you are. To visit our special link, go to expressvpn.com/zero. You can get an extra 3 months, which might be the entire length of the quarantine, for free. Support the show, watch what you want, and protect yourself with ExpressVPN at expressvpn.com/zero.
The silence tells you everything.
Go ahead.
We're just not doing. Yeah. That's the problem. We have nothing new to report. Actually, I did do 9 holes of golf in my apartment yesterday. It was pretty shitty. Since Augusta National was canceled, I decided to do the apartment national, where I set up 9 bowls throughout my apartment. They were numbered. And then the tee boxes were these little spots of foil I put on the ground and on my bed and on the couch and all over the apartment. And I used my cat's toy, this little purple starfish, as the golf ball. So essentially it was more like frisbee golf, but I felt like nobody would watch that, so I said it was golf.
Yeah.
Anyway, people were very deceived. I got roasted almost immediately. But it was kind of fun. I can see me doing it again, but with the more difficult rules. Like maybe I have to keep my arm stuck to my side or something, or I don't know. But
what about if you have to throw it with only your toes?
Or with my left hand. Or honestly, I could do it with my toes. That could be the club. But anyways, it's a work in progress. But I actually kind of had fun doing it, and I shot 4 under par. So congratulations. Oh, nice.
That's pretty good.
Thank
you. Nice.
Yes.
I guess as far as Corona weekends go.
Course record, by the way.
As far as Corona weekends go, my weekend was pretty jam-packed. I had 2 books that came in the mail. Speaking of the Masters, one was The Second Life of Tiger Woods, which I'm excited to read. And then the other was Meet Me in the Bathroom, about the resurgence of the rock scene in New York City post 9/11. My sister has already stolen that one from me, so I'm going to have to read the Tiger one first. Friday night, we had round two of Virtual Chopped, where Kate was a guest judge. It was Easter themed, so I put on a fire outfit. And for all those asking, my tie was from Lily Pulitzer.
So
that was fun. Kate, what did you think about Chopped?
I can't believe if you and your friends are looking for fun stuff.
The pictures really were good.
It was amazing. The food that they created, I thought it was going to be like, oh, okay, your friends are throwing some shitty food together, but no offense. But I should have figured you officer types are always on the, no, I'm just kidding. But yeah, no, it was really impressive. It was super cool. And I was shocked. Chaps, you got to be a guest judge on there.
Yeah, I would love to be a guest judge on there. I had my time on Saturday night. I did a little Zoom hopping from Stoolies, tweeted out that if you wanted me to hop on your Zoom, I would, and went and talked to several people, and everyone was so nice.
How many Zooms did you join?
Probably like 15 or 20.
Jesus.
I mean, it was a lot. Yeah, I went through a lot of people.
I was hopping on them right after Chaps. Like, I'd be trying to catch up to him in a Zoom room, and they're like, oh, Chaps just left, but hey, blah, blah, blah. Well, so I decided I did a big cousin's family Zoom Saturday night. And I accidentally sent my cousin Jack the link from one of the other Zooms I had been in. So all of a sudden, my cousin enters this chat, and he's like this huge man with a giant black beard. And he was like, what the fuck? And they're like, what the fuck? Anyway, so he wound up in ours, but good time.
That's the risk that you take whenever you're doing a little Corona Zoom goofing.
Indeed.
I also wanted to mention very quickly that Forbes came out with an article with probably the most not necessary blog of all times. Forbes had an editor's pick article that was entitled Americans Are Excessively Eating, Drinking, Smoking Pot, Playing Video Games, and Watching Porn While Quarantined. No shit.
Get out of here. Let me tell I just have carpal tunnel in my right hand now because I'm playing tennis or something. You know?
Yeah.
Sheesh.
So I did this. The quarantine really has kind of opened up my eyes to the lack of hobbies that I have like inside the house. Like, you have a lot of people who are really into video games, or cons likes to read biographies and things like that. I don't really do a whole lot. Like, at my house, I watch like Alaska shows and shit like that, but other than hobbies, I don't really do anything. Kate, you're painting. We're starting our painting show today, which should be fun too, on Periscope and things like that. But do you guys have any hobbies that you're kind of leaning into more?
No, I mean, besides reading, but I already did that, and there's only so much you can do inside the apartment, so not really, no.
I've been writing more of my own stuff in my own time kind of thing, which I had not been doing for, like, a year pretty much. So I started writing, like, I don't know, I used to love, I don't know if it's a hobby, but joke writing. Even if I don't do anything with them or use them for anything, I feel like it keeps my mind, like,
fresh.
Whatever. So I've been kind of writing as if I'm getting ready for some sort of stand-up thing, even though I'm not. But that's felt pretty good. I used to really love doing that. So kind of getting back into that. But you're right. Like, as for like a physically like molding clay or painting or whatever.
Or, yeah, know, something.
Like, how sick would it be to be like a woodworker right now, where you could just go get a bunch of wood and make shit? Like, there's people that I follow on Twitter that are unbelievable at making like desk, or if you could whittle or do something like that.
Kyle, yeah. Our social media guy, he does shit like that. He's like the handiest man. But also on Amazon, I almost bought a wood whittling kit.
Me too.
The other day. We should buy it. We should all start whittling. We should start making
I'm
our own
into whittle.
Wow.
Our own chess pieces.
My wife would be so pissed if she came in my office and it was covered with like wood chippings.
I've been saying for so many years that I do want to learn the piano. And really, I guess the only thing stopping me now is whether or not it's financially responsible to buy a keyboard.
I do love a good baby grand.
You get a keyboard for like $80. I just did it.
Oh, they're only like $80?
Yeah, you can get one for like $80 on Amazon.
All right, this might have to happen then. Just
are
because
we starting a band?
I mean, that'd be cool. But
I
just think
the banjo and the guitar.
There'd be nothing. I think there's nothing cooler than just being able to like, oh, there's a piano, and just being able to sit down and belt out a song.
Agree.
Like, it'd just be unbelievable to be able to go tickle the ivories and sing a little "We Are the World."
I would also like to do a pottery wheel.
Yeah. Little Patrick Swayze.
You and the missus, right?
Yeah.
By the way, friendly reminder: his nephew was in my unit.
Oh, yeah. That's
right. That's right.
About that. But I was thinking about that because one of my buddies gave me the password for the online wrestling, like the WWE's app that they have. And they have all the different old wrestling on there. And me and McCartney have been watching those together and like going through like Great American Bash from 1995. And it made me remember when I was a little kid, I don't know if you did this, if you guys did this too, I would fight all of my toys, like constantly fight them. Like I had this one named Tall Man who was like a leprechaun, and I would fuck Tall Man up. I would whoop his candy ass all across town. I would do like the flying elbows. I would do like the power slams. I would do all kinds of shit. And I had one of those rings, you know, like that. It was like a wrestling ring that it was elastic and you can make them like shoot into each other. I used to do that. I wish I was confident enough myself just to play with toys still.
Well, I mean, what's stopping
you? Just don't let anyone see it.
Or just don't put it on the internet. Yeah. Just do it.
Yeah.
I mean, can you think about it? Like, if you guys had a wrestling ring full of shit, would you play with toys?
Yeah, probably. If I had it in front of me, yeah. In fact, I was on Amazon the other night. I was looking up Nerf guns.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
But I would
look it up everything.
Yeah.
Me and Pat at work ordered blow darts, which are awesome. For $30, you can get this sick, like 30-inch. It goes right through the fucking wall, man. It's insane. I could kill my cat if I wanted to.
That's probably a little dangerous for you.
Anyway.
Yeah, what are you going to do with that in the apartment? Yeah. You're gonna set it up like against the door or something?
Well, I was thinking about doing, you know, like skeet shooting? Mm-hmm. And how sometimes there's courses where there's like 18 holes, sort of, where you go to 18 different spots and shoot. I was thinking about kind of doing the golf thing I did last night, but there's balloons set up around my apartment.
Okay.
And I'm trying to shoot the balloons with the blow dart.
Are your walls concrete?
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's no way you break anything.
Yeah, they're super thick. This is like a pre-war apartment. I can't hear my neighbors at all. So it's still, though, that's how powerful these, it's amazing.
You should put an apple on Spork's head, do a little William Tell.
Yeah, do a little. I could never. But yeah, you're right. Hobbies are, when I was a kid, I collected state quarters.
Okay, nerd. So
I had the big map. I had the big map of the U.S. like up in my room, and
when they changed,
I will say
it was exciting.
It was. Yes. It was like, oh, did you get a new one that you hadn't seen before? And you're like,
Arkansas. Yeah. What? Arkansas.
I had braces. I was like, oh, it's an Oregon one. Well, sweet. And I would like put them in the. Anyways, and then like some of my like I know my granny would be like, I found a couple quarters for you. She'd be like, oh. And then I loved also putting my coins into coin sleeves. And if I went to a relative's house, I'd be like, anybody got some coins you need me to sleeve? Like, oh my God.
Like the roll of pennies?
Yes, dude. I loved putting, I can't explain it. Also, because I guess that's the only math I could ever do is just counting to 50. I raced pine cones with my neighbors. At the bottom of our neighborhood was this little stream that belonged to this church. And whenever nobody was at the church, we would dam the shit out of that thing and like flood the yard. And then we would release the dam and raise pine cones down it. And then also I was so fucking into dinosaurs for like way before Jurassic Park, but it was also way longer after that.
What age do you think you got to go away from? I think dinosaurs is a super common interest until I would say probably 11, 10, 11. Once you're older than 11 and you really like dinosaurs still, that's weird.
Unless you become, you know, a paleontologist.
I think that's a weird job to have.
Okay. That's what I wanted to be. Ask my parents when I was a kid. I was like, I want to be a paleontologist. I would dig for dinosaur bones all the time. And I had these wooden dinosaur models and I had a dinosaur umbrella, a dinosaur stuffed animal, everything. I was like, and look at me now. I talk about my beehole.
Yeah, you're crushing it. Yeah. One of my favorite ones, I don't know if you guys did this. Did your parents ever have dried beans around the house?
No, I don't even know that that's a thing.
Oh, I used to love to take chopsticks and try to pick up dried beans with the chopsticks and see how many I could pick up and put into a jar in a minute. Like, it was my goal to, like, get better and better and better at it.
Okay, you're a weirdo.
The old childhood beans hobby, right. Uh-huh.
I used to love to do that. And much like yours for the quarters thing, I used to love doing baseball cards and putting those and having, like, a nice trapper keeper full of baseball cards and moving through and showing my buddies, like, the different ones that I had. Yeah. That was a big one.
Yeah. I wonder what happened to all my baseball cards. I honestly have no idea. I don't know that I had like anything really good in terms of worth, but those things just disappeared one day.
Did you have any other hobbies as a kid?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I didn't like
beating up the neighborhood kids who weren't athletic.
Yeah. I was the neighborhood bully. No, I definitely wasn't. No, like me and my buddies, we would just make up weird games. So like instead of like just like playing like one-on-one basketball, we'd make up a weird game where like you'd stand on different spots and that had different point values and you had to get to a certain point. We would just take different variations of sports. And I could just remember like 1 week we would be like all in on one sport and play that every day for a week. And then next week we would switch to something else.
We used to play baseball football, where you just had the rules of football, but you would play with baseball gloves and baseballs.
Yeah, just stuff like that. Just like, what the hell does that matter? And we also used to just be very exploratory, right? We were always outside. Two things that I put on the list that I would love to bring back. Number one, bike gangs. When you had your bicycle and you just rolled up with your friends and you just went places.
Oh, down the Jersey Shore, me and my cousins, hammered drunk.
Yeah, I mean,
deep on bicycles.
It's that's awesome. What we do now. We just bar hop on our bikes. So that's, I guess bike gangs are still a thing for me, but just in a different way. But then also playing in creeks. I don't play in any creeks anymore.
That's a good one. That is a good one. Man, the rain, everybody listening, this is playing in a creek.
Yeah, dude, the rain today. In a
creek, whenever you first go underwater and it's like kind of dark and murky, you're like, oh, this is spooky. Especially for me, I was from Florida.
Yeah.
You never know if there's an alligator in there.
Right. I was also big into like Bill Nye and shit, so I'd be in the creek. And as a kid, you're like, holy shit, this creek goes to a stream, goes to a river. This water touching me is going to wind up in the fucking ocean, man. Mind blowing. Anyway.
But no, the rain today reminded me one time there was a creek and there was a really, really bad storm and the creek got overflowing and it was rushing real bad. So we're like, that's obviously very, very dangerous. But we were like, oh, whatever. Let's get some tubes, see where this will take us.
Oh, and then, rain and floods as a kid was awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then I don't know where we got it, but we had a zip line that we set up over the creek. And I remember one time I was doing the zip line and it broke because obviously at, 12, we're not engineers. We didn't really tie that shit off too well. And I
thought you were still dragging a wagon at that time. That was why. No. Yeah, Home Alone and the Goonies really brought zip lines to the forefront of American society. Thank
mm-hmm.
God.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys used to lay in the gutter whenever it rained really hard?
No.
Oh, yeah. I used to at my grandparents in Drexel Hill, we would stand under the drain pipes. We'd splash around in the side street.
Yeah.
The street gutters. You know what I mean?
I used to love being in the gutter. And my mom would come out and be like, you're going to get worms.
That sounds like a poor kid
worm goofing. Maybe that's what I need to do. I would love to just like in my neighborhood now, just go up to my neighbors, if I liked any of them really, and be like, hey, if I went up as the dad now and I was like, hey, the other dad that lives here, can he come out and play?
Yeah, that'd be so great. Remember that? Calling up your buddy and be like, yo, can he come
or
out
just
and play?
Knocking. Like, there's
just
no calling.
Door, yeah.
Like, you just went and knocked, like, hey, can Joey come out and play?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Joey, get outside and play.
Growing up, you know how my dad and the neighborhood dads got around that? They would pick a project, a group project that was for all of us neighborhood kids, like building. We got to go over to Mark Wachowski's and build a tree house for the kids. So, and then it would be all them crushing Budweiser's. And like, maybe they get like one wood plank stapled in throughout the entire day.
Yeah.
But like, they were just hanging out in the edge of the woods, just kind of boozing it up and hanging out. Anyway.
So, Kate, going back to your neighborhood bully comment about me, I guess one game that I did play with my buddies, we would play King of the Hill and we would just go somewhere that had a hill. And everyone started at the bottom and whoever could get to the top. But it was very, very violent. You would tackle people. You would push them down the hill. You would throw them. You'd grab clothes. It was no holds barred, but it was a great game.
Agree.
Lots of games like that. I mean, whenever you have to tackle anybody with the football, it's not a phrase that we can say but back in the day, we used to say it all the time. And if I saw kids playing that in my neighborhood now, I would think it's like legitimately weird, like that they were tackling the shit out of each other.
Yeah, that was the game. That was the game. It was like, here's the line. I'm going to stand here. You got the ball. Get past the line. That was it.
Yep.
That was the game.
Well, I would recommend to everyone out there who's cooped up then, get a little wacky and creative. Last night, I feel like what I did with the golf ball was something a kid might come up with and do. So get weird with the stuff in your apartment and go back to your childhood and come up with like a weird little game in your apartment.
Yeah,
if you have kids.
Stop being age appropriate. Even if you don't have kids, stop being age appropriate. There's no rules right now.
I'm sure
if you don't.
If you're in the barracks, I'm sure your gunny would love to walk in and see you've created a mini golf course.
If you're not doing that, just shave your pubes real weird by using Manscaped because April is Testicular Cancer Awareness Month. Did you know that one guy every single hour is diagnosed with testicular cancer? So this is a reminder to all of them to check your balls, folks. Manscaped, in addition to providing the right tools and solution for safe and easy manscaping, has partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to spread awareness for men's health and early cancer detection. They have, together, they are committed to raising awareness awareness for the most common form of cancer of men 15 to 35 and giving support to fighters, survivors, and families impacted by testicular cancer, as well as their We Save Balls initiative. Whether you're down there trying to clean up your sack, why not give them a little investigation? Give the old boys a squeeze. Am I right, Cons?
Yes, sir. Why not?
Roll them around like those beans I was doing with the chopstick.
Hey, kids, feel your balls. A little Tom Green action.
Oh, yeah. Shout out longtime stoolie Tom Green. Some of those liquid tools for your family include the Crop Preserver. It's an anti-chafing deodorant for your balls. Your balls stink and you need to keep them smelling nice. The Crop Reviver, a spray-on ball toner and refresher. And the Perfect 3.0 includes an anti-chafing performance boxers that help you your package smell good all day long. Make sure you go to manscaped.com with the code zero at checkout. You're going to get 20% off if you do that. Learn more about testicular cancer screening at manscaped.com/WeSaveBalls and share their educational video to help save lives and balls. You can also get 20% off and free shipping code with zero at manscaped.com. That's 20% off at manscaped.com with the promo code zero. Your balls will thank you. All right, let's move on to round number two, get into some actual military stuff today.
I always want to cut you off on the ads because I always have so much to add.
Well, go ahead.
Balls, I'm just so grateful. They acting like, oh, guys, keep your balls, whatever. Keep it clean for us, for the love of God. For the love of God, put that shit on your balls. Put Manscaped stuff on your balls. Powder them up, make them smell good. Finally. Sheesh.
Our balls stinky, Kate.
Yes, dude. And they act like they're not, and they're like, oh, girls stink. You fucking stink. Put shit on your balls, man.
Speaking of balls, did you guys see that video I posted on Saturday? Little highlight action?
Mm-mm. No.
You guys didn't see the video we posted?
Nope.
Wow.
Nope.
That's kind of rude. All right. Never mind.
All right. Let's move on to round number two. What do we got, Kate?
What do we got for round number two? VIP ejects during retirement flight. This, as soon as I read this headline, without even knowing the story, I laughed out loud because it gives you a visual immediately. So here we go. At times, it reads like a dark comedy script as it describes how the unidentified 64-year-old panicked and screamed with fear during his first flight in the Rafale B, which took off from Saint-Dizier Air Force Base in northwest France last March. I'm probably butchering those names, but oh well. Then he shot out. So this is a guest, VIP guest in a passenger seat of a jet. Then he shot out at high speed, losing his helmet that had not been fastened around his chin properly, before landing in a field close to the German border. His anti-G-force suit, worn by aviators who are subject to high acceleration forces and designed to prevent a blackout, had also become loose around the trousers. You gotta wear a belt with your gravity suits, man. It was only through good fortune that the pilot was not ejected by his passenger's actions too, which could have led to a very serious crash. I just picture like a neighborhood or something like that. The pensioner had never expressed a desire to take part in a flight like this, and especially not in a Rafale. How would you say that in French? A Rafale.
I think you nailed it.
Rafale jet. So anyway, despite this, his colleagues at the defense contractor where he worked for most of his career set up the flight. Oh my God. You know, it's hard enough when you recommend somebody for a job and you back somebody up for a job and then they fuck up at the job and you're like, I'm embarrassed because I recommended them. This guy's company was like, hey, Rafale, will you give this guy a flight?
And you know the dude was terrified before, like when he got there and they're like, hey, you're going to do a flight in the jet. If this guy pulled the ejection fucking lever or whatever, you know he was nervous as hell and didn't want to say no because he didn't want to look like a little bitch.
Well, it said this defense contractor had worked at this company for most of his entire career. And I'm thinking maybe it was like his retirement send off. Maybe it was like a happy 25 years.
It was like whatever. A gift for him because he had been in there forever.
So the situation generated a feeling of stress for the passenger. And this was particularly felt. This is just a no shit statement if I've ever heard one. The stress of the passenger was particularly felt during the ejection seat briefing where he had to assimilate a large amount of information in a very short time. I can imagine if you're already terrified, that doesn't help. He then demonstrated a certain calm following the loss of the rear seat and the canopy. The pensioner, meanwhile, had expected a gentle ascent, but the plane climbed at 47 degrees compared to around 10 to 15 of a standard passenger plane. I imagine that'll pucker your beehole if you're not prepared for it. There was then a loud bang and the force of the ejection tearing his unsecured mask and oxygen from his face. The Revel B's command ejection system is meant to both fire both seats at once, meaning the pilot feared his seat would give out at any moment. So this motherfucker, this poor motherfucker, is still flying, and they're just waiting to be shot out of their fucking plane because some old retiree dude who hopped in the back pulled the fucking lever. Anyways, he managed to land with the use of his parachute and ended up in a field shocked and with minor injuries, the retiree in the backseat, and the plane was landed safely, but holy shitballs.
This guy is lucky he didn't have a goose situation where he just hit the canopy and was dead on impact.
Another thing, I'm just a very visual person. I always daydream and imagine these things. I could not stop picturing this guy's coworkers on the ground. They're like, there he goes. He's going up the bus. And then they just see this this little body fly out to the sky. They're probably like, oh, fuck. It's so cool. They're probably.
He ejected from the plane.
He fired the missiles.
I blow my nose too, sir. So whenever I like this dude, like sitting in the back seat, the process of where he has to get to his mind to actually pull it. Like whenever you see videos of somebody on just a regular passenger jet and they're trying to like yank on the emergency, the state of panic that your brain has to be in to be like, the safest thing for me to do is not to trust the pilot with 2,000 hours of experience driving this. But it's for me, who's probably never parachuted in my life, to jump out of this fucking plane. It'd be more safe. Like, where's your brain at when you go there? And how fast, if the cover's off for the dude that's flying the plane,
going
pretty damn fast. Imagine what that feels like, and you don't have the top over you, and you have to stay calm thinking that you're about to get ejected over. Because I'm sure he had to weigh in his mind, is this going to crash into a house? Where is the plane going to go if I do get ejected? Like, you have to do all different types of things. I need to hear what they're saying and have it translated over, like, the airspace. Got to hear that.
Oh yeah, the fact he's so lucky that the pilot didn't get ejected, because that would have caused a major crash, maybe killed a ton of people. But this is just weird to me. Like, I think people have a sense of whether or not they can handle excitement to this level. Like, there's some people who like don't like roller coasters. They scare them. So what do? They don't go on roller coasters. This guy should have known when they said, hey, we're going to put you up in a flight, which is probably a really cool thing. That's something ever since we started this show, I want nothing more than for us to get invited to go fly with the Blue Angels or Thunderbirds or somebody where we can go up in a jet. That's really my only sole goal with this show at this point. But this guy should have known, like, I'm not going to be comfortable with this, so I'm going to have to pass. And he should have never gotten in that plane.
Well, see, I don't know. I can see his buddies surprising him with it and him feeling like it would be rude to be like, it's tough to get something like that arranged. It's very rare for him to say no. Maybe he felt peer pressured. I also can't stop picturing what he thought as he was laying on the ground after he finally landed. And he's waiting for them to come over to him. He's probably like, well, that was a little bit of a, oops, oh God. Like, what do you say?
Yeah, like, as he's like, descending.
I like to picture the 65-year-old man and the captain who was in charge of the plane, like, walking into their supervisor's office and going to parade rest and be like, well, we fucked up. We didn't do it good. And to say that, like, the people, even being a dog handler and doing demonstrations for people with a dog, like an attack dog, you have to make sure whenever you're doing a demonstration that everything is perfect, like that they have the suit in the exact right way. Like before Kate went and got attacked by a dog, I made sure her suit was in the right place where she's not going to get hurt and things like that. Going into a jet and not having the helmet secured properly or the trousers secured properly, how does that happen?
Right. Why did they not do some final checks to ensure that everything was in the exact
place? Usually
right
it's overboard. Like, those checks are overboard.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking this guy was so panicked, he maybe started trying to take his shit off in there. I think possibly. He was, like, feeling claustrophobic and he just freaked the fuck. I don't know, but just.
No, you're probably right, Kate, because, I mean, that's got to be a very uncomfortable. I've never had a G suit on, but if you've never had one, I don't know. I'd imagine it's feels weird, and then you got this mask on your face and a helmet, and it's just all these things together, and then you're going in a plane that's about to go hundreds of miles an hour. All that together is a recipe for disaster if you don't do well with these sorts of situations.
I'll stick with a G-string, thanks very much.
All right, let's move on to round three. Round number three, we're going to continue with our career day goof, and we have a damage control officer from the United States Navy. What I liked about this episode, this edition, was this was a guy who said, I failed out of my first MOS school. I was supposed to go to do this, and now I did that. Very rarely do you have people that admit those type of things. I think especially when you get out, people like to act like they were essentially the greatest military member of all time, never failed at anything. But there is a high portion of people that it struggle for them to find their fit or to adapt. And he seemed like he did that, which is awesome for him to admit. It takes a big man to do that.
Because so many people, you're right, so many people have, and they just don't say it. And it's like, it's very common. And then in a way, it's a good thing because it wasn't meant for you. And so then you find, it does help you find your path. And in the end, it's a good thing. But you're right. I like that he did that too.
Going a little bit in the open and having like an open contract in the Navy, you said that it was just bullshit for a long time because he was just essentially cleaning rust off ships, which would be terrible. I mean, that would be a terrible job to have for 4 years.
Yeah.
But they don't tell you that whenever you walk into the recruiter's office. All right, here's a damage control officer. You can hear his story now. All right, now on Zero Block 30, we have Jack Rasmussen. He is going to tell us a little bit about his job, which is what, Jack?
As an operations specialist in the United States Navy.
So what does that mean?
So there's kind of two different jobs. Well, we're in port, not a lot we do. We route messages, and then the rest of the time we normally clean until whenever we get told to go home. But we're underway. It's a little bit more hectic. Usually you're six on, six off. A lot of times underway we'll track surface ships, planes, any other kind of information we're kind of looking at. We work with all different warfare areas, so surface, air, subsurface, electronic, all that good stuff, and we kind of build it into one picture and kind of disseminate the information to everybody.
So I imagine that it kind of looks like, if you're familiar with Silence of the Lambs, whenever they're tracking down where Buffalo Bill is and there's pins everywhere, that they're telling you guys kind of like on the ground, you got to track and plot all these different ships that are in the ocean. Is that kind of what you do?
Yeah, kind of. You know, it's like, you know, another ship is telling us like, hey, we see this and we're getting information from here. You know, our air guys, they, you know, the helicopters are flying and they're giving us information and we kind of disseminate and we figure out, hey, what is that? We figure out what it is and what we should do too.
And how is the process of that for school? Because you finish up with Navy boot camp and then you go on to your follow-up schools. How do they introduce the concept of being for doing your job?
Well, actually, when I got out of boot camp, I started out as a fire controlman and I got the belt buckle. And then a month and a half later, failed out of the school, became undesignated.
Oh, yeah. I love this DM that you said, because a lot of people, I think this is a great learning point, because I'm sure you've noticed, and we've talked about it before too on the podcast, that a lot of times in the military, everybody tries to act like they're a sniper, that everything in their background went perfectly. That's not the way that happens. And sometimes there's a job that you signed up for, doesn't work out, and then the army or the military reclassifies you in some way. So whenever you failed out of the school, did you become open contract and they say, okay, now this is what you're going to do?
Yeah, I became an undesignated seaman. So I was basically a bosun mate, you know, paint the ship, take the rust off, repaint it again, do all the line handling.
Just real boot work. The ship.
Yeah. It's just grunt work. Just great. Every day. But yeah, I joined my ship while they're actually on deployment. So I got right in the middle of everything, drove the ship. We were lookouts. We'd stand forward lookout looking for other ships. And then aft lookout, you're looking for people who might've fallen in the water or, you know, anything that's going into the water. And then right as I got to the ship, I got to put in an application basically to start finding a new rate to actually become something. And it took me a while. It took me probably about maybe 8 months until I finally got the job as an operations specialist. And that was basically, I got that in June. We were kind of in the middle going through a inspection, so I didn't get to actually do my job until August. No school, just hey, go check in with that chief, and he'll tell you what watch you have.
So kind of like an apprenticeship, sort of?
Yeah, it was all on-the-job training. So, I mean, it is a job where I'm a firm believer in that you're not going to really know much until you're actually doing something. You can read about it, you can test it, but until you're sitting in a seat or actually doing it, it doesn't matter.
So let's walk you through. You get out of the rack whenever your shift starts. What do you do whenever you first check in, you sign into the logbook, you know, I am here, I'm ready to rock and roll. What are your responsibilities? What do you kind of oversee? What do you do?
So on my last deployment, I was a combat information center watch supervisor. So I was in charge of the enlisted side of all the evolved combat. So I would get up, I go check in with another OS2, is one of my friends, and we just kind of talk about what happened in the last 6 hours, see if there's anything coming up in the next 6 hours that we need to prepare for, and then kind of give a contact log of, like, these are the ships we're tracking, these are the planes we have in the air, these are helicopters we're launching, kind of go through that, and then I start my shift, and I'm checking in into each warfare area, seeing what they need, if they have anything coming up themselves, and then I would check in with the tactical action
officer. What would a warfare area mean? What does that mean?
Oh, so surface warfare, a lot of times surface warfare would be any ship or any submarine, just kind of tracking different plane, or sorry, different ships or submarines or even helicopters that were in the air at the time, giving us, like, hey, this is the course they're going on, this is what they are doing, this is what we should do. In air warfare, they're tracking all planes, whether that's commercial or military aircraft. And then electronic warfare is kind of, they're like the squirrels of a ship. I mean, I really don't even know what they did. They tell me, oh yeah, there might be something down here, but I can't actually tell you. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know.
So would your job ever involve, like, briefing, say, like, the captain or the XO or anything like that, and about what's going on? And what does that look like, and how is that process learning it for you?
Yeah, so every day, you know, we'd write a sit rep, basically, and we'd kind of give a rundown of what's happening on the ship today, you know, how much food, how much fuel do we have, who's sick, who's attached to the ship that's not actually part of us. And, you know, I brought that up through every department head, and then I'd route it up through my chain of command, and then eventually to the XO and to the captain. Captain sign off on it, talk to him a little bit, and then I'd go release it kind of to our fleet or whoever we're working with for that day and let them know where we stand. And then a lot of times there'll be a daily brief of, you know, this is what we can expect today, tomorrow, this is what the Chinese or the Japanese or Iranians are going to be doing, or we have intel on, stuff like that.
So you kind of have to have, for your position, a full mental view of everything that's happening on the ship. I imagine learning that on the go and through, like, a chief or something like that in the apprentice type program is pretty difficult. I mean, the fuel part, I imagine there's just like a fuel reader that you have to do. Mm-hmm. So would you say it's more like logistics, or what is it, something different?
It's a little bit logistics. I'm a pretty good people person. Mm-hmm. So I'm really good at talking to people and kind of getting a good feel of what's to come next. So really kind of every day, you know, I'd be going to talk to engineers, and they would give us their fuel report and everything, and I kind of go through it and figure out, okay, like, this is how much we're burning today. Go talk to our supply officer, okay, this is our food for today. And then I go talk to medical, and kind of, you're basically kind of giving our just a quick picture of what is happening today on that ship. And that was just only one part of the job, was just to let, you know, basically let the fleet know, this is what we're doing, this is where we're at, and this is how we're doing.
So what would another part be?
Part would be just, you know, actually being standing on watch and anticipating. So, like, when we do underway replenishments, we were setting up messages and figuring out, all right, this is where we have to be, and this is the course, this is the speed, this is what we're going to get, this is what we're going to give them. The other thing, too, for underway replenishments, I was a master helmsman, so I actually drove the ship alongside the oil tanker and get the fuel and supplies. And when we transit through the Straits of Malacca in Singapore or Straits of Hormuz out in the Arabian, I got to drive the ship for that. And when we pulled in and out of Pearl Harbor too.
That's a pretty cool experience, right?
Yeah. So I started out as a deck seaman. And so I was, you know, already driving the ship. And when I struck OS, I kind of still like actually driving the ship, and our master helmsman was leaving. So I was like, well, I'll give it a shot. And, you know, just kind of ended up being that was kind of the main thing. I actually got 2 NAMs for the same thing, for being a master helmsman.
Very nice. So yeah. See, and that's a good lesson for the junior folks who listen that didn't, their first MOS didn't work out. You can go on and be really successful doing something else. Now, obviously, you're out. You're another ginger-bearded fella just like myself. Are you doing anything that the Navy trained you for? Or are you doing something completely different?
Well, I got out, joined the reserves for a little bit of time at Stratcom in Omaha, Nebraska, but my orders didn't have a top secret clearance on it, and the reserves didn't want to pay for an investigation. Now they did Stratcom, so they kind of gave me an out. They're like, you know, we'll let you go. I was like, okay, I'll take that, and went to school for a year, started doing plumbing for my in-laws company, And just kind of, you know, me and my wife talked about it, and it's like, oh, maybe it's a good idea to kind of take a break from school because there was a better opportunity to be a plumber. And I love it. It's the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah, and you'll never be without a job because we talked about it last week or a couple weeks ago, whenever this, I don't know when this is going to air, but the ships need serious plumbing work. 400 grand for some of those ships. If they have a clogged toilet, that's a big old turd, dude.
You know, the first week that I was on my ship, I'm still trying to get acclimated. I don't even know who any of these people are. They told everybody in berthing one, muster in berthing one with the senior snipe, the head of all of engineering for enlisted. And it's a Filipino senior chief yelling and screaming, saying he's going to put a fire hose into our toilets and blow it out, and we're going to all have to clean it. And like 10 minutes later, there's a fire hose in the head going into the toilet, blowing it out. And there's paper towels, and someone had flushed down a shaker bottle, underwear.
It's like, why, dude? Why would you do that?
Or even just go outside, just throw over the side. I mean, I don't want to litter in the ocean, but.
Right, but it's not going to make that big of a difference with how big the ocean is if you're throwing out one shaker bottle. I mean, not that we're for that or anything like that at all. But, man, we appreciate you taking the time to join us, Jack. Thanks for telling us about life on the open seas, man. We appreciate that.
Yeah, no, thank you. You guys have a good one.
You too.
Can I just say, I think what's great about this interview series is that I think some people have this misconception that the three of us are the foremost experts on everything that has ever happened in the military and will ever happen in the military. And there's so much out there that we don't know. Like these, I didn't know that job existed. So I think it's very interesting to hear about these different jobs that actually exist.
Yeah, I think that people have enjoyed hearing the different jobs, especially ones that aren't as known about, like a damage control officer, a welder. We've had somebody who's a refueling pilot, a chaplain, and we're going to have more. Like I just recently talked to a dude who's in Canada, and he's an artillery guy, Cons, and he's going to come on the show and talk about how their artillery isn't necessarily shooting in combat, but just shooting at mountains to create triggers that make avalanches happen. That'd be a fun job to be the avalanche creator person.
Oh, wow. Yeah, for sure. That's just blowing up shit 101.
Yeah, so I want to go Canadian style.
Tornado watching in one of those vans. And then avalanche missile person. I would love to be just hanging out with them, cracking a couple cold brews.
I would love to go do some shit with the Mounties, man. Like, I think of all dress blues, people always nut themselves over dress blues and say that those are the best. Mountie uniforms blow dress blues out of the water.
Yo, that red just pops.
It pops, and that with that beautiful caramel high-top boot that goes with the rider boots that go almost up to your knee.
Yo, do you know how expensive rider boots are?
Oh, I'm sure those are expensive as shit. I mean, if banners are like $200, those have got to be like $500.
I'm glad I don't buy those anymore. They are so expensive.
So expensive. I still have my Danners. Whenever I used to actually mow my own lawn, that's what I used to wear, my Danners out there. But now I don't even know if I have them. Maybe I'll bring them back out. We should do a uniform inspection, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't think you have yours at your place, though, do you, Kate?
I think my ex has all my stuff. So
I got a set of ACUs in the closet. That's about it that I have here.
You could fit into yours?
Yeah, I think so. Might be a little.
Oh, the ACUs. Yeah. What about your service uniform?
That would honestly be 50-50. I don't know.
Please, this week, get the lady to record you trying on your uniform.
All my other like dress uniforms are at my parents' house, so the only thing I have are ACUs, and I think that those would, I would pray that those would still fit me.
All right.
Yeah, I can't go through the olds. All right, let's do a little mind control goofing with the CIA. I saw this story. It came up. It originally happened in 1953, so we're going to go back to 1953. Ooh. And I feel like anything that happened in the 50s, like right after World War II, when Korea was going on with the CIA, anything that's happening in the early 50s is very, very shady. The 50s seems like a very shady, even though like they look back now, like you think it's like Leave It to Beaver type shit. I don't think that about the 50s. I think nothing but government conspiracies and like trying to recover from World War II and all that.
Well, also because
a lot of unnecessary shit, like let's just see if we can sew a butthole onto this mouse, man.
Yeah.
Like, what?
But also too, you got to remember the CIA was only started in 1947, So those early years, it was kind of like no rules. So they just kind of
no holds barred for sure. And that's basically what this story is about. Happened in 1953, and it was the director of the Central Intelligence Agency officially approved the project called MC Ultra. The project, which continued for more than a decade, was originally intended to make sure the United States government kept up with presumed Soviet advances in mind control technology. It ballooned in scope, which it often does whenever like the DOD and CIA is involved, and its ultimate result, among other things, was illegal drug testing on thousands of Americans. It wasn't the first time that the American government, without permission or notice, secretly gathered information on its people, but MC Ultra has gone down in history as a significant example of the government abuse of human rights, and for good reason. The intent of the project was to study the biological and chemical materials and altering human behaviors, according to the official testimony from the CIA director said in 1997. The project was conducted in extreme secrecy because of the ethical and legal questions surrounding its program and the negative public response the CIA anticipated if MK Ultra should become public. Under it, the CIA gave itself the authority to research how drugs could, quote, promote the intoxicating effects of alcohol, render the induction of hypnosis easier, enhance the abilities of individuals to withstand privation, torture and coercion, produce amnesia, shock and confusion, and so much more. Imagine if that story came out now, dude, like with social media, because you didn't have, if the media refused to report on anything CIA related because they didn't know the rules and things like that. I cannot imagine what would happen now if they were saying you're doing acid and LSD and slipping it in people's drinks whenever they don't know. And the type of people that they took was like people that were homeless or people that were sex workers.
Super
and they
vulnerable
kind of like
people.
Mm-hmm. They kind of like kidnapped them.
Yeah, well, they just, you know, basically used them as lab rats, which is totally unethical.
Which is a shame, because 1950s Kate would have volunteered for the LSD thing. I would have been like, yeah, pump me up, whatever. Yeah, any kind of...
But you would think that it wouldn't be much, because the Supreme Court had to say in a 1995 decision, this is actually bad, because it wasn't just like a onesies or twosies. There was 162 different projects that were indirectly financed by the CIA, and they were contracted out by various universities, research foundations, and similar institutions. At least 80 institutions and 185 researchers participated, but many didn't even know that they were working with the CIA. Imagine how fucking pissed you'd be if you're at like the University of Virginia, and the next thing you know, you're doing something extremely illegal for the CIA, and you're like, what? I thought we were just goofing. I thought I was just doing a little thesis goofing. I didn't know that slipping this sex worker a little LSD was bad.
Yeah. I think it's crazy, too, that there was a 3 to 4 decade period where there was just this catch-all that said, like, well, why are you doing that? Soviets, man. We got to keep an eye out. It's the Soviets.
Yeah.
Just do whatever you want.
I just, like, it's a shame that all that, the 8,000 pages got destroyed and, you know, that they burned most of the evidence. Because I mean, my God. Those people
very
should be compensated. Whoever was involved in it should be compensated so heavily. It's crazy.
Well, it was the 8,000 pages that weren't destroyed. That's how they found out about it. There was tens of thousands of pages that were.
Oh, right, that got
destroyed.
And
then they stumbled upon 8,000 pages that was mostly financial records, and that's how they unearthed everything. That is a movie in and of itself, because you always see that in movies of somebody that's really good at the books and goes through, like, the what was it, The Accountant with Ben Affleck,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's, like, going through the things and figuring it out. Coming up with this plot and figuring out what happened just on financial records, people who do that, like the, what are they called? Forensic analysts, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, those people are brilliant, man.
Yes, very.
It's absolutely
very
crazy. I do wonder, even now though, you know, there's all sorts of, not like this level or whatever, but you know, there's experiments going on.
But you never know. It could be at this level. You never know.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it could be.
Like,
but
whatever. If you tell me the CIA is doing anything, I would believe it.
Absolutely. I mean, and not to get too existential, not to get into whatever people believe, but I'd like to believe that when you die, you get to just find out about anything you want. And I just want like a whole section of my afterlife devoted to whatever the hell the CIA has been doing for the last 60 years.
Yeah, honestly, I don't hate that.
Yeah.
Cons dies. He goes and he gets a little tall glass of whiskey.
Yeah,
and sits
let's
down
go.
In a nice little leather chair with a nice one of those lamps that has a green tint on it. And he's like, all right, spill the beans.
What do you got?
Need to know. I wanted to, what, I wonder what else what you would really want to know whenever you died if you could figure
JFK
out anything.
For sure. I need to know everything JFK? That happened with JFK. Anything with any sort of extraterrestrial life, whether there's truth to that or not.
I want to see like 70 billion years ago. I want to see a big ass asteroid hit the Earth. I want to see it from afar with binoculars and be like, "Oh fuck, I want to see the dinosaurs rolling across in the afterglow like tumbleweeds."
Mhm.
I want to stick my hand in a black hole and see what happens. Yeah. I also want whoever's up there to teach me about magnets. I think that would be cool to kind of understand magnets. And also rain. I was thinking about that this weekend. I don't understand rain. Like, I kind of cursory understand it, like the process of going from liquid solid gas and things like that. But whenever you think about a flood, like when Houston was flooded, I think 2 years ago, and all of a sudden from the sky drops enough water that it creates essentially a river that covers an entire town the size of Houston. That is hard to wrap your brain around. How is that in the sky? How is that much water in the sky?
It's a conspiracy, pal. Okay? Get on board. Rain,
yeah, man. The government creates weather. Yeah, man.
Birds, not real. Rain, fake news.
I've been thinking a lot of stuff about things that I don't understand, and there's a lot. I think of myself as a decently intelligent fella, but even the basics of stuff. How does a car work? I don't understand that.
Forget it, dude. I don't know how a rifle works.
I don't combustion. I don't know. No, I've never really given thought to how does a car work. Like, I'm sure if I sat down and gave thought to it.
Yeah. Even a simple calculator. How does a calculator work? I don't understand that.
Yeah, what's in there? Computers?
I do love the idea of me getting up to wherever. I'm not a religious person, but to whoever, if there's like a main spirit up there. And me, I'm like, welcome to the rest of your eternity. I'm like, all right, thanks. Helicopters, man. What's up with that? Like, what?
I like to think it's just like Netflix. So we get up there and it's like, all right, what do you want to check out today? And they got everything.
But you could download it all to your fast, like the fastest speed internet, and you just know it, where you don't have to hear somebody run their bitch ass mouth. That would be great. Like, if you just like, what do you want to learn? And then they just give you a USB and you just stick it in your brain. And they're like, oh shit. Yeah. Wow.
I'm in.
Like, because I saw this machine that was on Amazon this weekend that had all the old arcade games. Like, did you guys go to arcades whenever you were little? Like, skee ball and, like, just actually play the games?
Yeah, absolutely.
Down the shore, I did.
Yeah, so they have, like, you know, the Battletoads or the Ninja Turtles or Street Fighter or whatever. There's one machine on Amazon right now. It's, like, $200, and it comes with, like, a large arcade setup with the fat knob joysticks and the B&A. It has 2,400 games on it for like $190.
Yeah. Chaps, in fact, in my building, in one of the common areas, there's two big arcades that I would play Street Fighter 2 on all the time. Obviously, right now they're turned off because they don't want people touching stuff, but those are definitely awesome.
Do you get money off of your rent because they don't have the arcade game?
You know what? I'm about to write a strongly worded letter to the manager.
Yeah, I'd be like, that was one of the selling points of me moving in this building. You need to give me, I need $50 in my back pocket right damn now.
In quarters, please.
Yeah. I'll put them in a sleeve for you.
Perfect. But but unless they have, you know, a cool state on them that you don't already have.
Yeah, I think the listener can tell that our brains are all over the place today. Like, we were, honestly, I was looking through the sheet. Like, let's just be honest with the listener. Like, we're trying to do a military podcast here, but we don't want to talk about coronavirus all fucking day, every day for the next couple months or however long we're doing this. And you don't want to listen to that. But in reality, nothing's going on in the military. The only other story that we possibly could have had is going to be coronavirus related or the Air Force Thunderbirds that Cons mentioned earlier. They did a little flyby on the Las Vegas Strip, and people were going bananas about it.
Yeah, no offense, but that was unnecessary.
Yeah, it was completely unnecessary. I mean, they're like, oh, we did this to honor the health worker. What the fuck does that mean?
Now,
like, do you
I
think that they're
see...
like, oh, well, now that those planes flew by, I
now I feel appreciated.
It makes my 20-hour shift so much easier.
Yeah.
Also, they were probably working and didn't see it anyway. But my only thing is, like, maybe they were already off on a flight mission, and so they just adjusted to go by. That's fine by me. But if they went out of their way, by the way, the flight pattern of that. Look like a wacky, floppy old dick with balls.
They didn't do a good job. And the whole eyes of the country is on you. If there's any of those pilots, sorry. But
make the balls a little rounder, please.
The Blue Angels posted a meme about coronavirus on their Instagram account. And it was amazing. Like, for the Navy to take a shot at the Air Force like this, they said that the Air Force has been practicing social distancing while flying for a long time and showed them like a fart and how close the Blue Angels actually get.
Shots
fired. That's a good meme. That's a good meme. Anytime that you could do that, that's a good one. Because what do you say? The pictures are worth a thousand words.
You got to quit the branch. You got to be like, all right, we stepped down as a branch. They got us in that meme. Fuck.
Yeah, but they still have their multi-national championship winning parachute team that we got to hang out with while we were at the Air Force
Very
Academy.
True.
So that's
true.
Good. I want to move on to round number five. But to get going, I think that people who aren't in the military don't understand one thing that isn't obvious, but maybe it should be, is handshake culture in the military. Can you guys explain kind of what I mean by that?
Yeah, you walk up to an officer, and first, they don't see you come. You sneak up behind him, and you get behind their ears, and you go, and they turn around, and then you go,
exactly.
And then you guys link arms, and you hold hands as tight as you can for 5 minutes.
You guys can't
minutes.
See that because it's an audio podcast, but Kate is rolling her arms around like a cheerleader.
Yeah, and then you link all your fingers real tight, and you lock eyes with the officer for 30 seconds, and then you both do a deep breath. And then he does that thing, or she does that thing, where they put their little finger, they sneak it inside the handshake, and they your palm.
And then you butthole kiss, where you do like
right.
you do like a scissoring, where you make buttholes. Like your buttholes actually touch.
Right.
But what I actually mean is that handshakes are firm. Like if you're in the military and you have a bitch ass handshake, it can make or break your career.
Anybody who gives me a limp noodle handshake, I judge them fucking, and I'm like, nope.
I think the two things that affect you the most that make me think that you're not Katie Stolen Valor is, one, your handshake. You are big time on handshake. And two, you hate it when people talk softly.
Yeah. Say what you're going to say. Let me hear you.
Yeah, speak up.
You
want to
talk sweet to me? You want to talk sweet?
Oh.
Handshakes. Shake my hand.
Very
shake my
important.
Hand and talk like a man or a woman. Sheesh.
Cons, was that big for you when meeting new guys?
Absolutely. But even handshakes for me, it goes way back to when I was growing up. My father was always very big on handshakes. Mm-hmm. And anyone who knows my father will tell you he's got a death grip of a handshake and his big old meat hooks. But he had me, you know, even as young as like 8 or 9, like you shake someone's hand firmly, look them in the eye and say hello, or, you know, call them sir, mister. But yeah, if you have a bad handshake, I will 100% judge you. Yeah. So much so that, you know, I don't mean to take shots, but I remember one time I shook hands with Tommy Smokes, and we shook hands, and I looked at him. I was like, Tommy, like, what are you doing, man? Like, what do you think this is? Like, let's learn how to shake hands properly.
I think I had the same exact conversation with Tommy whenever he shook my hand the first time. I was like, what the fuck was that, Tommy?
Yeah, yeah.
You
like,
know
you just
what?
Place your hand in it. It's not a fucking napkin.
A loose little – it's the best way to establish dominance. Yes. And I try and keep eye contact a little bit longer than the other person does, and I squeeze her hand pretty good. So help me God, if I go to shake your hand and you shake my hand but you don't stand up, you're still sitting down, that fucking grinds my gears.
Get on your fucking feet, you nasty
If you're
thing.
Able to, you better stand.
Nasty
when I
little
see
worm.
It, when I see like at a party or something, I see an older, especially an elderly person go to talk to a young man and like shake his hand and they don't stand up, I want to run over there with my knife hand out and be like, you fucking idiot. Stand the fuck up.
Get on
like,
your fucking feet.
Yeah, it's little things like that, man, that really get my goose.
Yeah.
I'm sweating now. I'm all fired up.
I bring all that up because Dr. Fauci, who is a big-time fella right now, like he's got – even though President Trump said that he retweeted the hashtag fire Fauci, man, like some of that stuff is like, what are we doing here?
What are we doing?
We're in the middle of a pandemic. We can't be having those kind of tweets. So Dr. Fauci, who is the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases director, said that Americans should never shake hands again in order to prevent the spread of coronavirus and other diseases. He says that if we didn't shake hands, that we probably have much less flu type symptoms every single year. But he said that even when things get back to normal, for him as the doctor and the director of this big institute, he thinks that we should never, ever shake hands again as a country. And so it got me thinking, like, what will we do if we get to that place? That changes like the entire culture.
Yeah.
You know what I don't mind though? The Japanese bow. I think that's respectful, it's reverent, and like you can still dominate somebody by bowing farther than them while still fucking looking them right in the eyes.
Oh, well, if you do that, if you live in Japan, then it's considered very disrespectful, Kate. So whenever
see,
you do that.
See, this is America,
and
so we
do you
it
know,
disrespectful.
And whenever you're in Japan, the person who you're supposed to bow deeper to the older person. So you're showing
that
them respect.
See.
Yeah, so you go down and bow that way. I like that one. There was another one. Kyle said that he wants to bring back the Degeneration X suck it, like whenever he sees somebody. I think that's what they should do in the military, same rank or below, when they're like, good afternoon, suck it.
Yeah, that could work. Like if we're talking about bows, I think we could bring back curtsies as well for mm-hmm. women.
And by the way, the suck it would refer to
or
ass,
men.
Assholes.
We can curtsy too.
Yeah.
Suck it would refer to assholes.
I think we could bring back top hats, and then you tip your cap.
Yes.
To
tip of the hat
would
be very nice.
Yeah. And I'm just going to go ahead and say it because everyone's expecting me to say it, so I have to stay on brand. We could even do salutes, and it doesn't have to be rank specific, but we can do salutes.
I think of all the different traditions that I hate in the military, saluting is the worst. Because even if you're having like a conversation, and junior officers, I would think, would have the biggest like gripe about it because you're constantly saluting all day long. Like enlisted folks hate it, but you aren't walking by anybody without saluting. You're either like if you're a second lieutenant or a first lieutenant, a second lieutenant salutes everyone. Like everyone in the military, they have to salute. Except for other second lieutenants.
Exactly. Yeah. No, being a junior officer is the worst because your hand's going up all times of the day, and contrary to popular belief, it's not that great. It's just annoying more than anything. But let me go ahead. You guys, let me see your best salutes.
Well,
go ahead.
I remember at Camp Pendleton.
Come on, you're not going to salute me? You're not going to salute me?
I will never salute.
Hell no, I'll never salute you. At Camp Pendleton, remember they had those, what was that TV channel, the military TV channel?
AFN.
AFN had, sometimes they would have like PSA commercials kind of. Mm-hmm. And they had this one where it's these two Lance Corporals and they're walking down the sidewalk at their barracks and they see a lieutenant coming and they look at each other and they're like, ugh. So they get a little closer, and then they both leap off the sidewalk. They do barrel rolls. They hide in the bushes, and the lieutenant walks by. And then the next time they're out, they see the lieutenant again, and they both dive underneath the car. Anyways, it's this, like, two-minute-long PSA where these two Lance Corporals are doing, like, 007 shit to avoid saluting. And then in the end, it just goes, just salute. They were having a problem with these young Marines just not giving a fuck and not wanting to salute. So they would hide instead of saluting. I loved it. Anyway.
Yeah. I love all those ones where they'd have like some Marines that come in or whoever, whenever I was on the Air Force base in Japan, whenever they would tell you what you could wear in the gym. Like they're the worst commercials of all time.
They
mm-hmm.
try
the
to be
worst.
Funny, but they're like, but I did love that one.
What is the best salute in cinematic history? There's one clear cut answer. Physically, but like the scene in which this occurs.
Dick Winter saluting in the Jeep.
Yeah. Bingo. When Ross comes up and doesn't salute him, and he says, we salute the rank, not the man. And he gives him a great salute back.
Also, in A Few Good Men, whenever he like fucking adjusts his shit, and he's like, I'm a lawyer and an officer of the United States Navy, and you're under arrest, you son of a bitch.
Get him!
Although I would definitely be on Colonel Jessup's side there.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Old Staff Sergeant Cawthorn. Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh. Fuck that kid. He doesn't run. Because he doesn't run very fast. Yeah, you're getting fucking haze if you don't run fast,
he
dude.
He just seemed like, yeah,
pick
but
up
I wouldn't
your
order
pack,
people
run
to,
around
I wouldn't
fucking
order
Gitmo.
People to haze him, though.
Oh, I would.
Oh, Chaps, don't do that. The kid died. People die from that stuff. Ugh.
Well, I mean, this kid, Private Santiago, is not a real person, Kate.
I know, but I just hate the shitty hazing so much. Ugh.
I love hazing.
Anyway, what are some other ideas that you have? Are there any more?
Hazing is not cool, people.
We got butt touches. We got a lot of other ones. I don't know what we're going to do, honestly. But
I hope I will say.
Just a simple hello would probably work.
Yeah, just a greeting. Greeting would work.
But it doesn't
feel
as personal if you're not touching.
Right.
My wife, actually, she is in public health. She works in public health and is finishing a doctoral degree in public health, actually. And she said that germ transmission is much less if you're hugging than if you're shaking hands.
Even a hug,
you have less germ transmission than even shaking hands.
What about if we carry these little caps around that we put on our tongues and we go
and just start licking people?
Yeah, but with the tongue caps on.
What about Eskimo kisses?
Ooh, I wouldn't hate those. I'm a big fan of Eskimo kisses. I will say though,
butterfly kisses.
Butterfly kisses. Eskimo
kisses.
What
if you butterfly kiss the cheek?
I think isn't that the same thing? Eskimo and butterfly kisses?
Eskimo's nose. Yes. Oh, butterfly is eyelashes.
Wait, is that an outdated phrase, Eskimo kisses?
I don't think. Probably. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if we
can. I don't know.
That
you're still hazing, so what do you care?
Yeah, I guess I don't.
I wonder, like, well, no, that's definitely very Jeremy. Up in the Northeast, we're very big on the kiss hello. So we probably need to cut that out too. But I will say,
kiss hello, like on the cheeks.
Yes, yeah.
That's I was watching that with Very Cavallari this weekend.
Oh yeah,
they were in Italy and they were doing it.
I was doing that back in high school to female friends.
Isn't it strange watching shows that are a little bit older and now, like, even with only a month and a month into this whole quarantine thing, you see people out in streets. I'm like, what are they doing? Like, have they lost their fucking mind? I saw a picture of one of my friends that was out like in a public square, and he posted a picture of him in his bar, and I was taken aback. I was like, what is he doing? Why is he being so dangerous and unsafe? But it was just an old picture. You got to now is the time. If you're putting that up, you got to put that TBT, even if it's on a Monday.
It's very important.
You got to put it up there.
Absolutely. I will say, hopefully, though, we can bring something back, because it was tweeted by a friend of mine when this thing first started. But, like, the daps and hugs when this thing's all over and you see some friends you haven't seen in a while are going to be some of the greatest hugs that have ever existed in the world of hugs.
Oh, this is a good one. Let's do real quick. Top person at Barstool that you can't wait to hug. If your first hug post-quarantine outside of people that live in your house or anyone, I guess, if you can hug them, who would you want to pick from Barstool?
Aside from you two?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cons, on the count of three, let's both say it. Because if you don't say this person, you're wrong.
Ready? Okay. Yeah.
One, two, three. Clem.
Clem.
Yes.
Oh, you know, mine is. It's close. Clem is a great hugger. Trent, too.
Trent's a hugger. Trent's a good hugger.
Iowa, man.
I like Large's hugs because he's just such a big man.
He makes
really
feel
brings
little.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see Kate being like, pick me up, Willie, and just take me around the office.
I get a baby Bjorn.
Yeah, he could do it too. All right, so we have a new segment coming up that we're going to post in. We have the amnesty box. We talked about it just really quickly last week, I guess, where we said we should have an amnesty box, and we did that. And some of the answers that we got were pretty damn good, including some good pranks. If you send us the amnesty box, you cannot be charged under the UCMJ about it unless it's really fucked up. Please don't do anything like that.
It keeps your voice anonymous, right? It turns your voice into a robot voice as it records it. And it also doesn't like save your number, right? And so it's like
It doesn't change your voice into a robot, but it does. We don't save your number, so we wouldn't be able to contact you anyways.
Well, the number, because Kyle, when he played it, wasn't it robot voice?
I don't know. I just thought everybody had weird voice.
No, it changes, because when I sent in my message, I called him and said, duty balls, blah, blah, blah.
That was just for transcribing purposes. So you can still hear your actual voice. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, anyway, it's still amnesty, right? So it's 718-550-2190. 718-550-2190. Somebody in your unit driving you nuts? Somebody you want to give a shout out that you're feeling good about? Did you do something real stupid and you can't tell anybody about it?
The Commandant's making you get a haircut?
Give us a call. Any little yellow birdie tips you want to give us, we're listening. So 718-550-2190. Colin, if you just want to talk to somebody, you just want to ramble at a robot, give it a whirl.
Yeah, and anyway. I do want to say, but before we go to this week and move into save rounds, the Marine Corps has got to fucking stop, man. Like, I love the Marine Corps and what it represents for a majority of things. This making Marines still go to fucking barbershops and get haircut is so stupid. And then Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton posting out on their official Twitter and Instagram accounts of these people, the barbershop workers, being frontline workers because you're making them do it, dude. Right. Like, stop it. What are we doing? Stop getting haircuts.
It's definitely asinine. And if you're really, really that ate up about it, make them just shave their heads at home themselves.
Exactly. Make it go recruit style where you got to shave your fucking head. That's what I would do if I was a commandant. I'd issue that because I wouldn't want to appear soft if I was a commandant too. Be like, okay, well, everybody's going to shave their fucking heads. How about that?
Yep.
You like that?
Sure.
You don't want to get a haircut? Good. You'll shave your fucking head. Do it now. All right. Let's move into save rounds, alibis. We'll start with you, Cons.
First, shout out to 3rd BCT, 82nd Infantry, who just redeployed this week. I got some DMs that a lot of those guys are big fans of ZBT, so we're just thinking about you. I know it's a crazy world to come back to, but we appreciate your service. But just interesting how I think there's so many good things that have come out of this time that we're dealing with that would not have probably surfaced before. And one that came to mind was last night on IG Live, after the unboxing presented by Dave Portnoy, I was watching a IG Live of two of my favorite musicians, Dave Haas and Brian Fallon, and they were going back and forth playing different songs, but more importantly, they were just telling stories. They were talking about their songwriting process. They were just telling stories about their music careers, and it was just super, super interesting, and it gave me it was something to do, but also it just made me feel really good, and that's something that probably might not have happened otherwise, and I think that's happening a lot all over the different landscape, is we're getting a lot of things that we would not necessarily have gotten before, and I think it's important to still highlight all those positives that are coming out of this.
Yeah.
Got it?
Just one for you, Hans?
Well, that was two. Oh, and then also, oh yeah, sorry. I got an espresso machine. Those things are awesome.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you've been making espresso martinis. Amazing, dude.
Oh yeah,
it makes me jealous. See, you gotta have us over one of these times. Absolutely. And be our bartender for because your drinks look great.
I'm happy to host.
Your girlfriend cooks like a motherfucker. Yeah, and her stuff looks amazing. So yeah,
we'll party do that.
Hans's place when this is over with.
We'll do that.
Big old butt kiss. Anyway,
what do you got, Kate?
For me, again, same thing. Shout out to anybody in the military who is stuck right now because of what's going on. Keep your heads up. This is going to pass, I promise. And especially everybody, too, the tens of thousands of military members helping out with the effort that's going on here. I know, and I think I saw in Washington or Oregon, they set up the National Guard sets up this huge, massive hospital with like 1,000 beds. It treated like 14 patients before they, actually we want to move all this stuff to another spot. And it's like, you just go with the flow. I promise this will be over with. Just stick with it. You'll be all right. And, but yeah, just thinking of all those people. Also, the Chaps and Kate show will be nightly. It's going to be a live thing between 6 and 7 p.m., usually 6:15 to 6:45-ish. So we'll be going live. It'll go out on our Twitters and on some other social media. So be looking out for that because it's a chance, non-military stuff, but we'll just be catching up every day. Just light, fun, easy. And there's kind of a game that you can play with it too. So if you're bored, you can play along with us. But that'll be between 6 and 7 on weeknights. So that's about
all. And Katie's new show with Brandon Walker.
What's up with that? Yeah. Is that going to be a daily thing?
Just Monday, Wednesdays, and Friday mornings. We'll record it the day before, but it's just a quick, it'll probably in the future just be 5 minutes, but it's just a quick 5 minutes where I basically just rip on Brandon Walker under the guise of a new chef.
That was great today. I like the one that you did today. It's awesome. If you haven't seen that, check that out as well. I don't really have anything. I'm just bored, dude. Like, I've been playing more video games. I've been playing Animal Crossing.
Your golf clubs are in your truck, dude.
Yeah.
That sucks, man, because you love that too. It's like, ugh.
Hey, bright side. Now you get a new set of clubs. You can take the insurance money and get a new set of clubs.
Yeah, but they don't cover it for theft. Like, so whenever, whenever they were doing that, they didn't cover it for theft there. I think it's Progressive. I got to fucking get on them and tell them, give me more goddamn money. It just stinks, but I mean, I'm going to get a yellow truck. I mean, I've basically made up my mind.
Are you?
Oh, yeah. What are you going to get?
I don't know make and model of what I'm going to get. I'm only filtering out yellow vehicles.
Neon?
Yeah, like I want to. I've always wanted one. Even when I used to go to the book fair when I was little, there was this old picture of Dan Marino whenever he played for the Dolphins, and he had Zumbas on. Isn't that what it's called, Zumbas?
I think so. Zoomies.
Zoomies, right?
The Tiger Stripes.
Zumbas.
Yeah.
Zumbas. No, I think it was Zumbas. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
He would have like a yellow Lamborghini. Any book fair, I was constantly getting the yellow Lamborghini, yellow Ferrari poster or whatever. That's what I wanted. I've always wanted a yellow truck to the point where even like a year and a half ago, I looked in to see how much it would cost me to paint my F-250 that was stolen, how much it would cost me to get that painted. And so now I've found a couple in the area and I'm waiting to see how much money I get back on my insurance check. But I think I'm 37 years old. I'm a father of two, decently successful. It's time for a yellow vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. I love that. I also love that you still have to go on base for stuff. I love just the thought of this, like, neon yellow vehicle. Any vehicle that didn't fit in, like, in the Marine Corps, remember the donks the guys would drive?
Oh, yeah.
It was, like, the huge Cadillacs, where, like, they would just pimp them out, and I just loved it because it was this little nonconformity thing rolling around base in a world mm-hmm. where everything's the same. I loved that shit.
See, I would love to get yellow, and then I could have basically get the green outline of our logo, and I could slap that bad boy on the hood.
Make you it put, a work expense.
I was just going to say, if you put that on the hood, then you can write it off on your taxes.
Yeah, perfect. Might need to. Might need to. I'm looking forward to getting something new, even though I'm not going anywhere. I just, every now and then, I'll just think, man, I'm sad.
Speaking of getting things new, you know what I'm very close to getting, Chaps, is one of those, have you seen the putting mats that have the lines, that like the perfect putting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm either getting that one or the one I saw Riggs tweeted. There's one where that lifts up like a drawbridge and it sends the ball back.
Oh, I have. It's a little combination of both. I'll send you. Okay. It's called Perfect Putt, and you have to hit it right into the little dot, like perfectly, to get how your pace. It is awesome. What were you going to say, Kate?
Well, I was going to say, we've been hopping in stranger Zooms. They invite us. They send us a Zoom link, and they're like, hop in our friend's group chat or whatever. If you have a military one, if you're in the military and you want to get your buddies together and send us the Zoom link, we'll hop in your Zooms from time to time if you want and just say hello and get to meet you and catch up with you because we're bored as fuck.
And yeah. Another thing that we're going to do too that I want people, if you play Call of Duty, reach out to me. I'll give you my gamer tag on PlayStation is Uncle Chaps. We're going to go live on, I think, our YouTube channel on Zero Block 30's YouTube. Kate and Cons can come in there and roast me while I play because I don't think they have gaming systems. But we'll go in there and we'll hang out together. And if you want to come and chill, we could do that too. It'll be fun.
Love it.
All right.
Instead of sounding the retreat, I don't want to sound the retreat. We've done it so much. Anyway, here's Wonderwall.